Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman. A weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far-out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song. Stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
La Tejedora. La Tejedora is the weaver. The weaver, one who knows how to pull from the land the very thing that's needed to make the thread, to weave it, to write it, to shape it, to lay in the patterns, the colors, to cut it from the loom, and to begin again, and again, and again. And so the cycle of return was the cycle of the wise woman, that is, el rondo, that starts with darkness, incubation, and then quickening, and then birth, rising, energy, and then the zenith, and then around into entropy, a darkening coming upon one's life, one's endeavor, a dying away, coming down into dark, into rest, into death, and suddenly, flash of light, whew, conception, incubation, quickening, birth, again and again and again. My Aunt Edna Parker, who married into the family, and I, she was the tallest woman that we had ever seen. She was close to 6 feet tall, and she has big bones. You know, her shoes wouldn't fit right. Her feet would spill over the sides no matter what. And she had a collection of hats. I hope you had a knot like this. If not, let me share my Aunt Edna with you. She had a collection of hats, and one looked like a pirate hat. You know, it was, imagine a picture hat, what they used to call a picture hat, which is a round crown and a big wide brim all the way around. Then imagine that you take the front of that brim and you pin it to the crown so it's flat across the front. And then you put a great big red cabbage rose on the front of the hat right there so that when you walk, the stems of the cabbage rose droop and bobble while you walk along. That was my Aunt Edna. So you could hardly fit under some of the doorways. She was so tall. And so she had all these sayings, and I treasure her so much because nothing about her ever went together in terms of the overculture that said a woman is supposed to look this way or she's supposed to look that way. I mean, truth be told, she used to smoke black cigars from time to time in her pirate hat with her red rose bobbling on it, motioning and telling stories and about weaving, because our family from the old country were weavers, amongst many other things. They made everything that they needed, including the cloth for their clothes and for their coats and for their blankets and their beds. So she would say something like this: how to weave a life of meaning? Yeah, I'll tell you the kindest advice. Behave yourself barely. Behave yourself barely. Yes, that would be Aunt Edna. Behave yourself. Barely. Behave yourself by submitting to the wise and wild force, not the collective. Behave yourself by keeping your promises to daring and courage and creativity and to the wisdom source you say you follow. Listen, if you were accused of being a wise woman today, tonight, if they came and they dragged you out of your house and they said, "We're accusing you of being a wise and creative force. We accuse you of being an elder who tests the young. We accuse you of knowing the difference between the life that is illuminated from within and the light outside that's just lit by cheap lights from overhead in the culture. What evidence would we find to convict you of these things unequivocally? What evidence would we find in your house, in your heart, in your mind, to convict you of the fact that you are a wise creative force? What evidence would we have? What smoking gun? Understand, there's no instruction written in stone about how to unfold your life in the gathering of your years. Aim toward living in ways, I would say, that are sure to horrify the few and inspire the many. That's what I would advise you to. As a woman gathering years, live in ways that are sure to horrify the few and inspire the many. You will be on the path of the tejadora, the woman who weaves the life as she sees fit, the handmade life. See, that's a phenomenon in culture. Any culture that has forgotten its root thoughts or ideas. And the storyteller of our time is the television, the film, the radio. Oh, we've lost many of our tellers around the fire. That's why that's important. For you to create your own fire, sit at it in your best wisdom and tell your stories that derive from your own life to others. The idea is that maybe we're not very interesting, those of us who have gathered more years. Oh, it's kind of boring. You know, we're usually relegated to being thought of as these failing people who, you know, have to be kept an eye on, else we might wander off in mind or body. And the fact of the matter is that give them something to remember you by. Give them something stalwart and bold every day to remember you by, so that they cannot pass you by and think of you as some trivial thing. Listen to this. The sun-daggered treasure tree. A sun-daggered treasure tree grew in the woods where I grew up, in the North Woods. This one tree that when the sun came in a certain way, it would create a little dagger on the tree. And my uncle always said, my uncle Tovar, he always said, that tree is special because the sun loves it and points it out to us. And look, that tree carries a dagger. Now, I didn't quite understand what that meant. And he meant cutting edge. There are cutting edge ideas in this world and represented by the symbol of the sun dagger. So listen to this about the blessed yew tree. The spell Y-E-W, the yew tree. It's an example of an old one who keeps her promises over the millennia, even though misunderstood, even though most people, cultures, cities, passed her by. Nonetheless, she continued to create according to her innate promise, even when no one noticed, even when no one cared, even when others ridiculed her. She continued, this yew tree, the species itself, to bend over its work and continue. So, like many a woman, the yew is a giantess of a certain age. Good, strong trunk, bright face. So what we call trees that have lots of leaves that are flickering, bright face. And where I come from, we call such a tree a beauty tree. But others in commerce used to call her another name. They called her a junk tree, trash tree. What this meant was the Pacific yew, one of the oldest of the forest, was devalued because they couldn't figure out how to exploit her. They couldn't figure out how to make money off her back or her bark. And so, like a woman who offers so much, the yew with its thousands of flickering little green hellos was overlooked and worse. Since they couldn't make money from her body, they began to bulldoze her. So when they were going toward more valuable trees or perceived valuable trees in the forest to cut down and make into lumber, they would bulldoze the yew trees And this junk tree, so-called, became so reviled that they literally would leave them littered on the ground, broken and cracked open, scattered all over the earth, just wood-slain debris, because they were so little valued by the iron dozers and the gasoline it took to roll over them. Yet, the ewes that survived had a secret. Woven into and under her bark, she produced a medicine that was unknown anywhere on the face of the earth. This medicine, when discovered, was called Taxol. True story. A medicine, powerful substance to fight against certain forms of cancer. Suddenly the great Pacific ewe was elevated from untouchable and granted a crown of gratitude? Well, no, not entirely. You know, although there are new people who recognize her for her great powers to grant more life to suffering human beings, there are others. You know, there will always be contentious others, people who make invisible the great medicines and the great walking wise people of the world. But remember what I've said to you before. Wherever there is beauty, the predator shows up. Wherever there's beauty, the predator shows up. So there are those who continue to say, you know, so what? There are those who continue to say, so what? She's still no use to us. Why should we let her live? Bulldoze her and her kind as usual. But also, there are many more defenders of her stands, more eyes open to her life force, indispensable treasures, her gifts, her medicine. And not all, but some days, not most, but many people in timber, environment, medicine, pharmaceuticals, and the government, and just people, see the yew tree clear, once considered waste. For many now, she's revealed as one of nature's true, holy healers. And presently, many people, including some former loggers and tough women and big men with thick fingers, are planting baby ewes as fast as their hands are able. Change of viewpoint. See, change of viewpoint is not miraculous because it convinces everyone. Change of viewpoint is miraculous, I think, because it awakens one soul to that which was once thought to be without true life or value. And thus, this change of heart, I think, is clearly the greatest of all the thousands of kinds of change possible, because it changes vision, changes hearing, sharpens listening and seeing. In terms of life, this great tree, the yew, did not falter in her gifts. She never forgot herself or her gifts. She never discarded her powers or her promise. She never laid down her gifts. If she were accused of being a holy healer, an elder who helps humanity, the evidence was right there all along. It only took those who have the eyes to see, like you, like me, the eyes to see the gifts in others and in ourselves, regardless of what anyone else has to say about it. You see? So you go on and you continue on in your gifts, and in the outer world, conduct yourself with dignity, with boldness. Older is bolder, remember? And behave yourself. The tejadora, the weaver. What's dangerous about a weaver? She pulls things out of the earth that were nothing much to begin with, and makes them into something to warm, to shelter, to care. The weaver's the one who makes tents? Who makes roundhouses made of cloth? The weaver's the one who places the patterns of stories into the cloth so that the stories can be handed down generation after generation. If you look at any of the first peoples who still exist on the face of this earth, if you look at any of the tribal peoples who still create their own cloth, you will see horses and clouds and children and people and gods and goddesses and animals of all kinds and plants and seeds all woven throughout the cloth. Those are not designs. Those are not patterns only. Those are stories. Those are the old stories. Well, if you connect the dots, if you connect the patterns that are in the cloth, then you can tell the story too. So the archetypal weaver in tales and in mythos is most often an elder. She is one who companions the young. This quality in fairy tales and mythology, Demeter, Persephone, Hecate, is one of the examples where the elders companion the young. Persephone is very, very young. Hecate is a crone. She's bent over and aged beyond belief. People say she's millions of years old. And Persephone's mother is an elder also. She's past her childbearing years. She is a matron. She is a matriarch. So that you find in the stories that the elders companion, mentor, and test the young. It's one of the most beautiful attributes of the old woman is that it's her job to help, to oversee, to give the secrets, instruction, and to see if the person now, the younger person, not young in years, young in experience, can actually do it now. And if not, try again and then test again until they can, until they can. So in tales, even if the heroine lets them down by not paying attention, say, you know, because she's naive or she doesn't know how to respect the elders, she doesn't realize what gravity there is to them, how much they have suffered and learned from their suffering, how their scar tissue is stronger than skin. She may discount how deep the lessons are that she's being given that are actually treasure. Because as you know, there are many, many people who know the secrets. They won't tell anyone. They're selfish and self-centered and jealous that anyone else should have them. About art, about living life, about being in the world, about raising children, about whatever it might be. But amongst the best in tales as well as in reality, the old women, even if the younger somewhat disrespectful, they'll keep trying. They'll keep paying attention to the tiniest thread and to the boldest threads in that person. And they'll help to weave them all together. So the weaver in ancient tales is thought of often as el destino, as destiny. In Greek mythology, they are sometimes known as the fates. And they are the ones who tell how life will go. I help the person to see the twists and turns as though it is a set of stories within the weaving itself, on how to finish each episode of one's life and take it from the loom and put it to use of some sort. That's the weaver. And the most important part, perhaps, is that no weaving is done perfectly. You know, there's a idea that perfection is a goal, an inestimable goal. I will call it an inestimable poison. It will kill you deader than dead in the soul because you will never be able to release the weaving from the loom and start a new one. You will never be able to take what you've woven and put it to use in your life for yourself and for others, because you're fooling around with it constantly, trying to take out whole lines of weaving because you think it looks lumpy or it didn't lay just right. No. We're not selling the weavings to the tourist trade. We're not making them perfect as we can for people who are going to buy. This is our life. That's far more interesting. To see a weaving that has gates in it, you know, those are gaps in the threads, you know, where one thread ran out and maybe, you know, you put the next thread in and didn't twist it tight enough. It's a little hole in the weaving, but that's all right. It lets in light and it lets out darkness. It's all right. And there are other places where it really is laid down rough. And maybe the thread you spun is all nubby and it isn't smooth and straight. It's thick, thin, thick, thick, thin, thin, thick, thick. Doesn't matter. That's part of the beauty of the weaving. You know, let it be. It tells the story of your life, your real life, your true life. And that's precious. That is precious. So the weaver is the idea that a woman will keep measuring and mending herself up so as to remain strong, to flourish, not just to be tough. You know, toughness is not all it's cracked up to be. I mean, it's good to be tough, but as you know, if a tree is tough and it doesn't sway, guess what? It breaks. So it's a kind of toughness that can sway or is flexible. And a weaver is a woman becoming wise because she will not allow herself to seek the forms of cultural happiness that interfere with the contentment of her soul. She'll not seek, you know, seek the endless forms of so-called happiness that the culture hangs in front of us, you know, like a whole clothesline full of tinkling cowbells. Say, oh, this is really wonderful, or go this way, this is really what. No. No happiness should be pursued if it interferes with the soul's contentment. Weaving is rhythmic. Weaving is rhythmic. Contentment is rhythmic. Happiness is more like, oh, look at that over there. Oh, hurry. Oh, maybe we go over there. Oh, no. What? Oh, no. Let's go. No, I think this way. Oh, no. Over there. No. Weaving, la tejedora, teaches rhythm, balance, contentment. And lastly, for all of us, as we learn more to take our life experiences and wash them and wring them out for their wisdom and shake them out and see what they're really made of, we'll have this idea that you will help to repair your own life wherever it's needed, and you will have this beautiful Hebrew concept called tikkun olam, the repair of the world soul, that you will repair the part of the soul belonging to the world that's within your reach, within the loom that you carry with you, that you will sometimes not weave only for yourself, but you will take a part of the world and put it on your loom, and you'll weave and reweave, mend and shape what is there. I'll take it off the loom and put it back into the world in a renewed or a new state. So these are some of the ways that the wise woman entails is shown as the tejedora, the weaver. When I was a little girl, which now seems so, so long ago, all of my aunts could do anything that had to do with the crafts of the hands. They could carve wood. They could carve stone. They could do crocheting, tatting, lace making. They could weave. They could knit. They could wring chicken necks. They had the biggest forearms you ever saw from doing all the kinds of work they did. They could birth babies. They could make a horse that was having difficulty with the birth of her foal, bring that foal to life and be in peace and to heal both mother and child. They were people of the land. They could not read or write. No, they were not of the greater world. And they had all their prejudices and all their, you know, came from an extremely patristic system of serfs and landlords. And women were treated, you know, as childbearing creatures, as well as property in many ways, as well as children. But nonetheless, they had radiance in all these beautiful pockets of their lives. And one of the greatest was their crafts of the hands. So when I was a little girl, my aunts were trying to teach me to knit. And I have, what I would say to you is the equivalent of can you have a black thumb for knitting? Something like that. I have a black thumb. So my Auntia Rosa, Auntia is her, how she's called, Auntia, and then Rosa. Auntia Rosa was trying to teach me to knit when I was a little girl. And we called her the mad knitter, you know? Yeah, I know you know people like this. Maybe you're a person like this yourself. You know, you literally can knit while you're doing something else. It's a remarkable, miraculous thing that I see people doing. I have people sit at meetings with me and they're knitting away and they're making the most beautiful thing. And how they do that without stopping to concentrate only on that, I have no idea. I just know I admire it greatly. And so she taught me that knitting is a form of weaving, and that, except you only use your two fingers and two sticks, and that, or, well, you actually use all your fingers, but two in particular, to wind the thread around the sticks. And then she taught that you unloop the skeins, you know, that you've spun from the sheep's wool, and then you've vat-dyed them in various tinctures, you know, made from various plants and so forth. And that in this way, the knitter, the weaver, the tejedora, is an ally of nature, that weaving and knitting cannot occur unless you are a daughter and son of nature, because everything comes from nature that has to do with knitting, including the needles. And these were made out of birch sticks that are limber, and the paraffin-covered sap at the end to keep the pearls from falling off. And so everything about this endeavor of the hands came straight up out of the earth in one way or another. And so when she would knit, Auntia Rosa, so her hands were beautiful. They moved like dancers, and with many legs, just so beautiful. And there, she had arthritis. So in the mornings, her fingers were red, you know, and hot, and they were cramped. But then, once she would start knitting in the day, all of a sudden, that all of that awkwardness would go away from her hands, and all of a sudden, whoosh, they would fly in this beautiful way. So I tried, and I was not able to make it. Instead of becoming a mad knitter, I became, I think, what I will call a sad knitter. I mean, it was really sad. My fingers and the motions of my wrists, I couldn't memorize what the motion was and the tension. I even tried knitting with rubber bands, which is an old thing that came about in the 1940s, where there were plenty of rubber bands and not enough yarn, and people literally knit with rubber and made mats and vests and all manner of things because of the war. So many things were rationed then. And I could not get those rubber bands to be in an even tension, you know, which is so critical to weaving and to knitting. And one time I made a friend a sweater, or I tried to make a friend a sweater, and I realized somewhere in the middle, after days and days and weeks of knitting, that the sweater had, it had three sleeves, but no neck opening. the neck opening. Either that or it was the longest turtleneck on three sleeves that you ever saw in your whole life. And I thought, well, I should have made it an eight-sleeve sweater, like for Kali Durga or something. But all levity aside, this work of even knowing how the weaving goes, even though we may not be the most articulate at it in concrete reality, knowing that it's a passing through and a holding of tension in a certain way that applies to our soul life is something that we learn more and more the more we gather years. We know when we're out of shape. We know when, oh boy, do we know when the tension is too tight, don't we? Yes. And we often know, as we gather more years, what we need to do to loosen it. So we begin in dross in many ways, you know, in a tangle. And we learn to aright and untangle ourselves and to weave clear. And in the story I'm about to tell you, which is Las Tres Osas, the three old reweavers of torn lives, in this story at the beginning, as in many stories about old women and young women, the heroine is a little bit of a dumbling. She has like a noodle head. It's an affectionate term for a know-nothing. She hasn't figured everything out yet. And she's probably not going to figure it out all by herself. But she's going to turn to a wiser force. Something will happen. Something good will happen somehow, some way, even though it may get all messed up at first. And so the dumbling daughter begins to fulfill her promise literally by being a sincere and innocent heart who doesn't know any better. And luckily, this is exactly what the elders are looking for, even though in this story, the elders are disparaged, denigrated, ridiculed, and put down. But listen, listen. Once upon a time, on a certain night, like no other, three old women made their way through the woods. Their feet were so wide that they left footprints wider than the path itself. Hairs sprouted from their ears and the backs of their hands. They were so old. They rolled forward together with great purpose, swaying from side to side as they went along, and they wiped out their tracks with their long white braids. The first old woman, this is peculiar. She had a long droop to one side of her lip, and on her back she carried a big bag of clacking spindles. The second old woman, she also had a peculiarity. She had a great broad bent thumb, and she carried heavy skeins of yarn, thick as ropes, coiled over her shoulder. And the third old woman had a lamed foot turned outward, and she pulled behind her a gigantic woven bag filled with the tools of the weaving trade, and several pointed distaffs poked out through the cloth. Suddenly, the long ears of all the old women heard off in the distance the sound of someone weeping. They turned as though they were a single creature. Their drinking cups banged and tinged against their water gourds. In the distant gloom, they spied a little circle of light. And as they came closer, they saw before the fire a lonely, lonely woman, whose face was hidden by her hands. Mijita, what? Daughter, what? What is it? What's wrong? Oh, the young woman said, oh, I'm doomed. A cruel taskmaster, so cruel a taskmaster, has said I must spin all this dross all night and weave it into cloth by morning. Look, it's almost a mountain behind me. Well, how was it you came to such circumstances, mijita, daughter? What did you do? And she leaned over the first old woman and wet one of the hairs of the girl's long, silky hair, twisted it to see what kind of thread it might make. Well, how is it you came to be here by yourself? Said the second old woman. And she twirled a piece of the girl's hair between her fingers to see what kind of nub it might produce. And the third old woman said, what were you out here seeking in the middle of nowhere anyway? And she, the oldest of the old women, the one with the turned-out foot, well, she brushed the girl's hair back from her face and quickly plaited it in two long braids and took red ribbons out from her pack and braided them in with the braids in such a beautiful manner. The girl felt better. What was it? The questions asked, perhaps, for which she had no answers. Or was it the brushing and braiding and plaiting of her hair? Or maybe it was the beauty of the scarlet ribbons set into her hair now? And three old women leaned in closer and said, tell you what, daughter, will you promise to invite us to your wedding if we complete your tasks for you? And the young woman said, oh, I would immediately, of course I would. And then the old women took their yerba buena brooms and began to sweep the air. Whoosh, 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 whoosh. And as they did, and the sound it made, and the little song that they sang while they swept the air, the girl's eyes from the warmth of the fire became heavier and heavier until finally she was asleep. And the old women just nodded to each other. And they took out all their weaving tools and began to weave and wove all throughout the night until the morning came. Young woman awakened, saw the weaver's tall loom pinions driven into the earth, and from them were flying four cloaks of new and beautiful, finest whole cloth. And the young woman wept in gratitude. But the old woman cautioned her to quickly gather her things together so they could avoid any further meetings with the evil ones. And so they donned their new-made cloaks. And in a whirl of the cloth, whoosh, 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 they traveled deep into the forest together. And there, for many turns of the moon, the young woman traveled in the company of the old weavers, and she learned their ways of spinning and weaving and cutting and shaping, and her love for them and for their songs, their kind and wise admonitions grew and grew. And the youngest of the old women with the drooping old lip, well, she gave out the best stories. And the middle old one with the crooked thumb gave out the very best healing touches with that thumb. And the eldest one with the lame foot, she could feel out the smallest and most precious herbs on the forest floor with her large divine foot. And thus they were always fed, and thus they were always healed. And they traveled onward, the young woman and the three old crones. One day, or maybe it was the last day, but maybe it was also the first day of their lives together at a certain crossroads, the old ones seemed to recognize, even though the young woman did not, somehow this crossroads was familiar, and they said to the young woman, we'll part from you now. Oh, no. Yes. You have learned all we know. We have given you everything that we know now. And now it is time for us to go onward. And for there are others somewhere in the dark forest who also need our aid. And so kissing and embracing her, the old woman reminded, now remember your promise to call us to your wedding whenever the blessed day comes. The girl wept and she vowed she would never forget them, nor her promise to them. And they wandered off into the forest. She stood in the crossroads with her arm reaching toward them as it gradually dropped that arm down to her side. I realized that the very best thing that could have ever happened had already happened, and now was time to live it. So several winters and springs passed, and as time went on, a handsome caballero, a suitor, began to court the young woman. And eventually, they fell in love, and they began planning their wedding feast. The bride-to-be remembered her promise immediately, and she sent word to the three blessed old women to come to her in her time of joy. But shortly after, as the caballero arrived at the young woman's cottage upon his fine horse, he made a complaint to his love. He said, "I've been delayed on my way here by three ugly old women who took up the entire roadway. How irritating. They were moving along so slowly with all their bags and their sacks and their staffs swaying. Oh, did their drinking cups bang and cheep on their belts?" She was so excited, she thought she recognized the old women. "Yes, and disgustingly so," said the caballero. "Surely the evil eye hovers over such as these." "Well, did each woman appear to have an injury of some sort?" "Yes, they were the most grotesque and deformed creatures I've ever seen in my life." And he bragged to his future wife about how lucky he was to have avoided trouble with them, that it was a good thing that he and his bride were not yet wed and had no children, for surely those ugly old women would curse their offspring. But the young woman immediately recognized the three old women as her queridas, her beloveds, and the old weavers who had helped her long ago were clearly journeying through the forest in order to reach her in time for her wedding. "Oh, no, no, no. No, no, my dear groom, mi novio," soothed the bride. "You're mistaken. Those old women once saved my life. One of those old women you saw, she received her drooping lip from years of wetting the thread for spinning. The second one received her bent thumb from carding the wool and spinning it for all the days of her life. Can you imagine? And the last one, she received her turned out foot by treadling the spinning wheels and the looms year after year without cease and without complaint. Can you imagine that? How wondrous. Those beautiful old women are weavers. They are mis tejedoras, mis ancianas, my old ones. I owe them a debt of honor. I've given the promise that they are to be honored guests at our wedding." Caballero looked like he had just eaten bitter fruit. He was filled with loathing. "How can you be such a stupid woman? No such filthy old women will be present at my wedding, nor in the future at my increase through children. No creatures like those will darken any day of celebration." The caballero mounted his horse, sat high in his saddle, proud, bedecked with his fancy silvers. He issued his bride an ultimatum. "Choose. Choose between. It's either them or me." And he folded his arms and he waited in full confidence. The woman looking so sad, said, I promised my old woman that they would be the honored guests at my wedding. I told you I owe them my life. I cannot break an old promise in the midst of making a new one to you. So, reining his horse around hard, the caballero shouted, well then, our troth is broken. And he switched his horse and he disappeared into the hedges, into the darkening forest. As the caballero's horse slowed and clopped along in the windy night, the caballero cursed hard and long, Santa Maria! Que choras! Que piazos! Que las malditas! Que malas noticias! Mother Mary, what unplowed land, what clowns, what bad omens, what bad news those old hags are. And soon the caballero on his horse came to a long groaning bridge suspended high above a great roaring river. And a horse tried to dance backward, but the caballero punched his steed's sides hard, and the horse and rider lurched to the very middle of that creaking, swaying span, and the bridge suddenly began to shake and hop. And one by one, the guard ropes at the far end of the bridge frayed right before the caballero's eyes, and the frayed ropes twisted and burst loose in a blur until one only frail thread trembling there left holding the shuddering bridge up. Oh, mio Dio! My God, todos los angelos, all the angels and all the saints, help me. I will give you anything, anything, algo, anything, help me. In a twinkle, the first old weaver with the drooping lip, with all her bags and boxes tied to her belt, appeared at his side. Ay, caballero, do you really mean what you say? Algo, anything you will give. Yes, yes, he cried, I mean it with all my heart. Then promise to invite me to your wedding whenever you should marry. It shall be done, I promise you. I shall invite you to my wedding. It shall be so, screeched the caballero. All right, so the old woman tugged and pulled and pulled and tugged together the ends of the frayed and broken ropes, and she wet them from her great drooping lip and twirled the threads fast until they were thick ropes again. And the mended ropes held firm and kept the bridge from falling, and the poor horse stopped rolling the great whites of its eyes, and with the caballero clinging to its neck, dashed across the bridge to the other side. And the old woman with a drooping lip smiled an engaging smile and disappeared. Now, shaken caballero rode along. He spoke little encouraging thoughts to calm himself. Well, she might have helped me, yes, but you know, surely El Dio, God, does not mean for me to keep a promise to such a ugly old maldita, evil one. And he thought no more of her, nor about his promise, and he rode onward through the dark forest. But a short time later, he lost his way in the night. But nearby, too, he could hear growls and snarls. Double yellow eyes appeared and then disappeared as he trotted along in the gloom. A hungry jaguar began to track the caballero and his horse, padding along at decreasing distances. Caballero kicked his horse, galloped faster, then even faster, until a branch like a great thick arm knocked him off his horse, and the jaguar saw that his dinner was within his reach. And as his horse fled in panic, the great predator, all the while moaning and screaming with hunger, circled the caballero. Oh, válgame Dios! Help me, my God! All saints and martyrs, help me, or else I am done for! I will give anything, algo, anything, only help me! And out of nowhere, the second old weaver with the bent thumb appeared at his side.
Ay, mi caballero, do you really mean what you say this time? Oh, yes, I mean it truly. Then you will promise to invite me to your wedding whenever you marry. Yes, yes, mi vieja. Yes, old woman, consider it done. I give you my promise. The old woman reached out with her broad, bent thumb, singing, chia, chia, chia. From the ropes of strong yarn carried in coils on her shoulder, she wove a cage around the man, one that no animal could rip through. Then she lifted the cage up with the caballero in it and carried him away on her back. And she ran through the woods with him, outrunning all the beasts and all the creatures and all the dark things that reached out for him. Once safe, coming to the place where his once frightened horse was grazing, with a great single slash of her broad thumb, whoosh, the old woman broke open the cage, and out onto the ground tumbled the caballero. The old woman smiled, "Dear, don't forget your promise." And she suddenly disappeared. Ay, and the caballero's heart had calmed. His bravado returned. He mounted his horse, spoke his little thoughts aloud in a voice that was still a little shaky. Oh, well, I was in a terrible peril, but, you know, surely el Dio. I did not mean for me to keep a promise to such an araña, a spider of an old woman. And self-assured now, and without further thought, the caballero traveled onward. But, you know, the forest has a way. After a time, caballero's horse began to act strangely. First the horse trotted, then proceeded to a canter, but then suddenly began to rush forward in a great flanking gallop. Faster and faster, the horse charged ahead with the caballero all a bunch in his capes and his trousers, and the caballero crying out on the wind for his steed, "Alto! Alto! Alto! Stop! Stop! Stop!" But it was no use. Suddenly ahead there loomed a steaming chasm filled with fire. No matter which way the caballero jerked the reins hard, right, left, upward, downward, tight, loose, his brave horse ran with nostrils full open, with hooves flashing la plata, silver lightning, and the horse gathered its muscles together to leap over the burning abyss. "Oh, no, 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 nada, no," cried the caballero, and the horse leapt and became airborne over the fiery pit. But the beautiful and powerful horse's great leap failed to reach the other side. Down! Down into the chasm the horse with its rider fell. Down and down and down and down they fell. "Oh, mio Dio, God help me, anything, algo, I'll give anything to save my life." To his horror, the caballero realized that he and his horse were falling downward at enormous speed, but there seemed to be no bottom to the abyss. No ground ever met. Just the endless terror of falling and falling. "I'm falling. Oh, Dio mio, mio Dio, my cup, por favor. No, no, please, please," cried out the caballero. "I promise this time, really, I really, really, truly promise. I promise I will give whatever is necessary to save my life." "Is that so, mijito? Is that so, sonny?" The third old woman, with the large turned-out foot, appeared in midair at his side. She was literally suspended in thin air and falling downward, right along with the caballero and his horse. And altogether, horse and caballero and old woman weaver fell and fell and fell down the great chasm. They fell with the horse's tail and the old woman's hair and the caballero's fringe on his chaps, and the reins all starched straight upward as they fell and fell, more down, more down, more and more downward. "Oh, yes, la vieja, oh, woman, I promise I will give whatever is necessary to save my life." "Yes, la vieja grande, yes, you great old woman." "Oh, yes, 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 vieja grande, oh, yes, great old woman, I promise, Do you mean La vieja grande y mi estimada? My most esteemed and great old woman? Yes, that's exactly what I mean. That's exactly what I meant to say from the beginning. I meant to say my most esteemed and great old woman. Do you suppose you might deep in your heart even mean, you know, mi la vieja grande y estimada y superiosa? Oh, yes, that's exactly what I meant to say. I meant to say that you are the most superior of all. You're the most superior old woman of many talents in all the world. No, all talents. You are made of all talents. You are everything. You are everything. Los todos, los todos. Then you will promise to invite me and my sisters to your wedding. Oh, my God. Yes, I promise to invite you and all your sisters to my wedding. How many sisters? 10 sisters, 100 sisters, 1,000 sisters. I promise to bring all of them, all in a bushel of old women, a wagon train of old women, any number of old women. I promise, my dearest, sweetest, kindest, most beloved, most merciful madrina, my godmother. My boy, you are not to call me madrina. You have not yet earned me as a godmother. Yet. But she put out her great deformed flat foot anyway, and on the tip of the big broad toe of her foot she caught his horse with him on it, and at her words, chee, 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 together they all surged slowly upward toward solid ground, and once there she gently and safely set he and his horse back down on the other side of the chasm. I, Caballero, hung on all three of the old women's necks, weeping, partly for fear that they would turn him into a purple and yellow serpienta, a snake, or partly for fear that they would never forgive him for breaking his promises, but also for the fact that he was just so very glad not to be falling and falling and falling and falling, but rather now be on solid ground. The caballero and his horse and the old woman traveled together for many nights and many days, and they said many things to one another during this journey. In time, he too, like his once bride-to-be, came to care for the old women deeply. And they, although with many reservations at first, they came to find him trustworthy at long last. And after much time, or enough time, the journey of the old women and the caballero brought them to the village, where his once beloved still spun with an easy hand and in a beautiful way. While she had turned away all suitors and become a woman unto herself. The caballero, overcome with such a change of heart and mind, came to her with his permitemea, his humbly seeking permission to ask for the woman's hand again. And though moved with love, she did not reply until after ascertaining from approving reports by the old women that his heart was truly healed of his material and demanding views, and that he had knowledge and commitment to the old women as well. She accepted. The wedding feast was prepared. Promises made early but kept late were fulfilled. The old women were given their rightful places of great honor at the wedding. And the caballero and the woman lived mostly wisely in their love for long and long and long.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with fallen woman. Stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.